Good afternoon, everyone. It's Paul D'Souza from Sightline Wealth Management, and once again, speaking with Warren Dureau, Senior Independent Consultant to Sightline, as well as pension funds and high net worth families. So today is April 3rd, and we have our weekly wrap up. Warren, how are you, first of all?
I'm great, Paul. How about yourself?
It's good. I actually miss you. I haven't seen you in over a month now, probably 5 weeks.
It has been. It's quite a long time. Well, I guess, Paul, sorry for interrupting, but to kick off the conversation, we had the official job loss numbers were out today for March. And the number may be a little bit confusing to a lot of people because it said the U.S. officially lost 101,000 jobs in March. But if you look a little bit more into the details, you'll note that this survey was taken for the end of the second week of March, just before the COVID pandemic began to devastate the economy. And there was also an additional separate survey that may give us a better idea what's really going on out there. And employment measured by the household survey showed about 3 million decline in the number of people who said they were working. And more importantly, I think there was 1.6 million people that just dropped out of the labor force altogether. So
right?
It looks like what we're seeing, Paul, all of a sudden, you know, we knew this was going to be pretty devastating. We're just starting to see the beginning of the economic data coming out, and we're starting to see the carnage, or how bad the carnage really will be. And really, you know, we're just at the beginning stages of this. So it's going to get much, much worse before it does get better. And this leads us into the sort of my next point was, you know, you and I have talked in the last several weeks on calls like this about whether we thought it was going to be a V or a U, and we both suggested that it was probably going to be an extended U, that neither one of us thought we were going to come out in a V-shaped recovery, and more of a extended U where the unemployment was going to be much higher than what people thought, and we also thought it was going to take much longer for those people who had lost their jobs to actually come back into the workforce. And in other words, that a switch wouldn't be switched and everybody would come back into work as normal, that it would take a number of months and maybe even a year before people came back. Are you still thinking that way, or are you looking at it in another way? Or have you seen something a little different?
Yeah, no, good question. From my perspective, I'm actually separating the stock markets and the economy because we know they're not one and another right now. I think the stock market is factoring in and discounting and moving ahead with data that I don't think is quite with reality. So I think the economy will definitely be a U, a long U, where the stock market would be, I think, a W, where there will be periods of it's almost maniacal in terms of just very news driven. And what I think, you know, we had, what was it, the job numbers on Wednesday were over 6 million and the market was up. Today we have new, on the job data you just discussed, and now it's down. So I think there'll be a series of lower lows and lower highs, and it'll be retesting the current lows and then having a recovery of, who knows, 10 to 15%, maybe 20, and then back down. So a U for the economy and a W for the stock markets.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the W. I was listening to an analyst the other day, and he referred back to the 1929 market decline, where the market actually fell 86% over the course of 33 months. But he said over that 33 months, there was 8 individual rallies that averaged 24%. So after the initial drop, the market went up 24 and then back down 33. The average is 33. So on its way to a negative 86. So that would, you know, if we do a comparison between economic conditions then and say today, because this is a global economic shutdown versus a 2008, 2009 tech bubble in 87, they were much different, I believe. It would suggest, if we were to follow that, you know, we have further to go. And along that line too, we also talked about the stock market and the valuations. And obviously we were talking earlier that the valuations are very, very elevated when we're coming into this, this latest downturn. And also there's a ratio out there, or calculation shows market cap to GDP. And at its peak, it was 1.5. And normally the average is at 0.8. And in 2009, it got down to 0.6. Well, based on the current valuations we're seeing today, in the latest numbers that we have, of course, they're not very current, but it would indicate that the market is still overvalued by over 30%. So again, that sort of falls in line with what your expectation is the stock market's going to behave much differently than the economy, and it's going to be more like a W type thing. So I have a question for you, because I know you're out talking to a lot of clients and prospects, and I'm wondering, what are they looking for? What are they thinking? What are you recommending in this environment? Because it's an incredible difficult environment to recommend anything, I would think, but what are they looking for? What are you telling them?
Well, I'm looking for a data set and specific things to occur. And I think, first of all, clients are asking, you know, have we missed the upside, or are we at the bottom? And I'm answering the following, is that you haven't missed the upside. I think it's very, very premature. You know, future calls we've had, the stock market is negatively correlated to the number of confirmed COVID cases. And just for listeners, we're a little bit of a different tact on this call. I will provide the session notes and charts and graphs as a link onto our website, so you can refer to it after you're done listening with this. And so we have a growth rate that is still accelerating. It's, you know, going exponential. So I'm looking for specifically the following. We need to retest the lows on the S&P 500 back on March 23rd. I don't think it will hold, and the markets will probably go lower, and a new bottom will be created, and then there'll be a rally, and then that new bottom will have to be tested. So we're looking for a double bottom, triple bottom before we get a little bit more comfortable. The coronavirus economic and financial news will actually have to get worse with a new round of panic selling. And because I think the news is being sort of given to us in bite-sized pieces. And that's really what we have to do, is just every day we're getting something, you know, some newsworthy information, and the market's reacting. And unfortunately, the bottom will be set when everything looks bleakest. It's when, you know, they'll say it's darkest before dawn. The Q2 revenues are going to be absolutely disastrous. And so that will, I think, couple with the number of confirmed cases. So I think around that time, things will be pretty bleak. Volatility index should be under 40 in terms of a comfort level, in terms of, you know, being an investable market. And if we're not waiting for the inflection point in the number of cases, it's at least a slower growth rate if individuals want to sort of get ahead of that news. So with those three or four specific data sets or data points, I think a very, very, very attractive opportunity will present itself. And I'll remind listeners that it'll be very difficult to actually invest money at that time. Your hands will be shaking, you'll be frightened. But that will be a confirmation that you're probably buying in at a lower price. If things are rising and it feels good, you're generally paying a little bit too much. I'm comfortable with that as well, in terms of actually retesting the bottom a few times, prices are going up, and being confirmed that we are, you know, things are actually somewhat getting to normal. And a little bit of a long answer here, but maybe leads to the next question you and I have been talking about. How does this economy then rebound? There's so many people now going to be unemployed. Our company is going to rehire the same amount of staff that they've let go. Our discretionary spending is going to be quite low when people return. They'll be paying back debt, loans. And so it'll be, you know, rent and mortgage and food and fuel. So I think it'll be a long recovery.
No, I would agree. I think you're dead on with those points that you just mentioned. One other thing I think it's worth noting, and I think we forget about it a little bit. You know, we saw a substantial rally there towards the end of the month, and people were optimistic, and people's, you know, investors were thinking, oh, as you pointed out, did I miss the bottom? And you and I both agreed that they didn't. But another factor that, unless you're sort of in the business, you might not appreciate, as a consultant to pension plans, I know that in the past that you would have the possibility of rebalancing every quarter or were when certain trigger points were occurred. So in other words, we had a 35% from peak to trough sell-off in equities. Well, quite often in the equity market, when that occurred, that would trigger selling some fixed income or utilizing some cash to actually add to your equity position. And that's done quite often on a quarterly basis. So at the end of the quarter, we saw, you know, a bit of a rally in the market. I think it came off the bottom of about 18,000 to 22, I think it was, where it finished up. And I attributed quite a bit of that is to being pensions and bigger players in the space rebalancing their portfolios and adding to equity positions. So typically what they have to do is to sell the, you know, everything that's doing well to buy everything that's doing poorly, because over the long term, that's supposed to work out. So I think we may see these mini rallies at the end of each quarter as rebalancing does occur. So that's something to keep in the back of your mind when you see a rally towards, you know, the last couple of weeks of a quarter. And it's not that the market's ready to take off. It's that, you know, you have these pension realignments or rebalancing strategies in place, and they're required to go out and sell their winners and buy the losers. So that's one of the things
to
consider.
Great.
Yeah. So, that's going to cause some of that seesawing of the market, right?
Yeah, I know it's a great point. Refer to the end of month bias, and that's where there's a lot of investors, too, that are on a monthly pack. Towards the end of the month, you'll see, you know, the last few days, money managers placing that money to work. So you probably see at the end of April, every, you know, end of May, et cetera. So don't let that kind of sway investors thinking that, okay, here's the rally here. I just want to go back to a previous point you made about the P/E ratio. So it's referred to as the Case-Shiller P/E ratio. And it's based on a average of inflation adjusted earnings in the previous 10 years, which is, so it smooths out the return, so it's not as volatile as the traditional P ratio. So the mean on that ratio is 16.7. Guess where it is as of today, what that P ratio is.
I'm not sure, but would I be wrong saying that it's somewhere in the low 23s? 22, 23?
Yeah, exactly. It's 23.29. So I'll place this chart up on our website. And so that actually, you know, back the envelope math, that, you know, still states, you know, from its mean, it could be probably 30% overvalued still. So
right. That
reinforces that point you made earlier.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, just looking at
the next topic.
As I was going to say, I think we're still a ways from the bottom, and I think we have to retest, as you said. So, you know, we're just... we're finding more and more evidence to suggest that the bottom is yet to come. But it won't be a straight down like we had the first 5 weeks. We think it's going to be more like a choppy, up, bigger decline, smaller increase, and so forth, whipsawed sort of environment for the next little while. Sorry. Go ahead.
You know what? So it's just not, you know, you and I saying this. I mean, you can – you know, read on various internet blogs, et cetera, that, you know, people are debating between the U and the V. Jerome Powell was interviewed, and he asked if there's going to be a V-shape. And you know what his answer was? I don't know. And he said he was just like, I don't know. And he actually, I think, referred to a W-shaped recession as well. So, you know, kudos to him for not blue skying this on this topic here.
Yeah.
So let's see here. What about, what else are you going to say?
No, that was it.
Okay. Let's talk about oil. It's had a nice rebound yesterday. I think the sell-off was quite sharp. and much needed. But you see that as a new floor in the oil price, or are we going to go back to the low 20s?
I'm sort of the mindset that we might have seen the bottom in oil, and it's not in anybody's interest to keep oil down at the level that it was at. I think the conversation that Trump had with Putin, as well as I'm sure they're talking behind the scenes with the Saudis, are suggesting, you know, if Trump really wanted to, if we think about this, think about what he did in the trade wars. If he really wanted to protect the shale industry in the U.S. and the oil industry in the U.S., he could just put a tariff on all imported oil. And right. If he wanted it at $50 a barrel, he could put, say it was 20, he could put a $30 tariff. Today it's trading around 27, so he could put a $23 tariff on it, getting the price of 50 bucks. Well, if that happens, all of a sudden the world price is probably going to go to 50 bucks. So rather than do something that aggressive, I think he might have had a conversation with him, say, guys, look, you know, we're all in this together. Let's just sort of be reasonable about it, and let's get this oil price a little higher. It's in the best interest of everybody. It doesn't mean that it's going to go right back to $50, or but you know, certainly come off the bottom there. But I'm not as, you know, I know normally when we talk about the equity market, we talk about retests and so forth. But I think oil got so overextended on the downside that we may not see it go much lower than that now. Well, we could see it go to, say, $30 or $35 and come back to $27 or $28. Or, you know, it could be seesawing back like that. But I'm sort of in the camp to suggest that we might have seen the bottom in oil. It certainly was quite an aggressive fall from 50-some dollars down to, like, $19 to $20. So that's my 2 cents on that.
Okay, very good. Just kind of bouncing around here. So Trump earlier had 3M cease shipments of the N95 masks to Canada. I don't know if you caught that. So this is a very contentious issue now.
Yeah, I think Trudeau came out and said that he was going to fight back on any kind of suspension of trade between the two countries. Now, what that means, I'm not sure, but certainly it will not go down easy. That's for sure. I'm sure there'll be additional conversations on it.
Now, just from a personal point of view, too, I have a friend who's in the import business, and he has a mask which are called KN95. And if you go on a website, 3M actually has tested them, and it's the equivalent of it. They have all of the data testing. It's traded in China, so some hospitals, North American hospitals, don't use them. Some are happy to use them if they're donated. So if there's individuals out there who really want their hands on masks, I just personally told that they are available. It's called KN95 masks. So if people are looking for those. What's interesting, too, is what's happening in New York with the accelerated rates in the confirmed cases and deaths. I think a lot of provincial governments here in Canada are now looking to that and reacting, saying, you know, if we don't get our house in order quickly, this is what our future looks like. I just heard this morning someone on our team is mentioning in Brampton, there is a, I guess there's a party in the backyard, about 20 individuals were there, and they were fined $100,000 for not abiding by the social distancing guidelines. And my father, I think I mentioned this in another call, my father's on an island in the Atlantic Ocean, and they've only had 17 confirmed cases, yet they're going through the extraordinary measures of closing everything down. That's grocery stores, gas stations, everything. If an individual requires information, food or supplies, they're to call a number and it will be delivered to them. So.
Well, that's pretty aggressive, and maybe that's what needs to curtail this, the rise in infection, but that's quite aggressive. And I think the unintended consequences, and maybe we'll discuss this next week. We'll have another data point, but we'll discuss it next week. But I think there's a lot of unintended consequences of this virus and the economic shutdown that we really haven't talked about. But maybe we'll do that. We should do that maybe next week in our next call.
Yeah, I mean, two that I know for sure is just talking to a friend and as well, and he said in France, the domestic abuse cases have increased 30% during this crisis. So it's a very stressful time, and the message to everyone is, be kind, be polite to your spouse, to your partner, to your family members. It's an extraordinarily tough time, but we will get through it. And also the warm weather, I think, will pose a problem where coming to April, May now, even June, depending on how long quarantine and social distancing lasts, individuals find it harder staying at home. They will be venturing out, and that'll just compound the problem. So I don't see an easy path from here. I think we have to take our lumps now. It'll be very difficult, but the sooner we get this over with, the sooner we can get back out.
Yes, I agree. It's going to be very difficult and stressful. We just have to sort of, as you say, be kind to each other, be mindful, be respectful, and I'm sure that when we come out of this, things will change and it will be a different world that we live in, but maybe a better world to go along with it. So yeah, let's hope anyway.
Okay. I think lastly, too, just end the call with just another data point. So on April 1st, or sorry, May 20th, I believe, Premier Ford and I believe the BC government, and I'm not quite sure if it's all across Canada, indicated that there will be no evictions for those that are renting. And so I have a contact who's a consultant to many of the apartment REITs in Canada, and he had a survey in which his clients submitted the number of individuals who did not pay rent on April 1st. Trying to guess what that percentage was.
I
How many
wouldn't have any
individuals?
idea.
It was, and he said this is low, it'll be higher, but right now it was 73%.
73% did not pay rent.
73% did not pay rent. That's right. And he said that is conservative. It'll be higher. He'll know more than that by in the next few days. So I'll be in touch with him, and we can discuss these numbers next week.
Oh, that's staggering. That's staggering.
Yeah. So as
Well,
we know, it's not it is not a non-payment. It's just a deferral. But hence to our point, what happens? Maybe they're employed, maybe they're not employed, and then so there's this there's a daisy chain of events that can unfold. So.
yes. Well, that's for sure. There will be a lot of unintended consequences of what we're going through right now. And
Right.
we can discuss some of those on our next call.
All righty. Well, thanks for your time, Warren, and thank you everyone
Well,
for listening.
thank you, Paul, and everybody who's listening. And I hope everybody can sort of take a breath of fresh air and relax a little bit and on the weekend and come back Monday morning all ready to go.
All right. Okay, have a safe weekend. We'll talk to you
You
next week.
too. Yeah.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right.